Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Wednesday, October the 27th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, violence in politics and the media's responsibility. This is not a left versus right issue. This is a right versus wrong issue. And violence, it's very clear, must be rooted out in any form. Thoughts about this and about the way the media is covering politics inside the United States, plus some audio excerpts from a hearing held today in the Senate Judiciary Committee, coming up next. Welcome back. How are you on this Wednesday? We are in the middle of the week, dear listener. My goodness me, this week has just vanished. It's almost gone. The conventional work week, as I say, is almost gone. And dear listener, I hope that this Wednesday finds you in a good place, in a better place, in a place that you feel comfortable in. I hope that that's where this Wednesday finds you, or whenever you're listening to this edition of the Politocrat Daily Podcast. I am Omar Moore, and I am greatly appreciative of you for listening to this particular episode, or to any episode of this podcast over the last, year and a half? My goodness me, it's been a year and a half plus of episodes on a daily basis, and my goodness, I want to thank you for your steadfast loyalty. It's something I truly appreciate. And again, all the very best to you and yours on a daily basis. And of course, as we move into the holiday season, we're just a few days away now from Halloween. And not only that, we've got then after that, here in the US at least, you've got the Thanksgiving holiday, as it's called. Then you've got, of course, Christmas holiday. You've got Kwanzaa. You have all, you know, Hanukkah is on the way as well down the road before we get to Christmas, and all the other holidays in between. And so this is what's coming up, and it's coming up thick and fast. And so this time of year can be very difficult for lots of people across the planet. Very difficult. There's a lot of loneliness, a lot of isolation, depression that is ongoing. And then depression that continues to grow and intensify. And so these are very sensitive times for people. And depending on the kind of year that you have had, it can intensify a lot more. It can be rather overwhelming. And I just want to say that for those persons who are listening to me at the moment, who are going through those things, please know that you have someone here who is a supporter of yours, is in your corner, and is rooting for you and yours to do whatever you can do to improve the position that you are in and deal with the predicament that you may find yourself in. So I do hope that all those things, whatever they may be, whether large or small, do turn your way, and you do have a supporter here, someone who is saying a prayer for you and keeping their fingers crossed for you. And I just want to mention that. I think it's important to continuously remind not just myself, but remind everybody listening that there are people who aren't doing so well, or there are people who are struggling with different things going on in life. And all of us have struggles. It's not to say that none of us have struggles, because we all have had struggles. Some of us have more struggles than others, have more on our plates than we would like. And so I think it's very important to emphasize and remind all of us about that. I'm sure the people going through that don't need to be reminded, but I do think that it's important to actually connect and reach out to people and just point out that we are all not in the same place in the world, on the planet, in our souls. We're not all in the same place. And I just, again, send my really best wishes and support to people who may be having really tough times right now. You just don't know who might be. And so I think it's important to spend a few minutes here pointing out that we must be more compassionate to each other, and definitely think that if you know people who are struggling, please send your support to them. Please offer a way to assist them. Please reach out to them and ask them what they can do. How are you feeling? Just talk to them. Talk to them. Even if you don't know quite exactly what to say, just reach out, connect. It makes a difference to a lot of people who find themselves in some very difficult places in their hearts and in their souls, in their minds, in their lives. It does. You'll be shocked. You'll be very surprised. Pleasantly so, I should say. How much of a difference that makes. It really does. With mental health challenges, with mental health, with all kinds of things. Just a simple hello, how are you? There are people whose mental health isn't strong right now, isn't in the place they want it to be in right now. There are people on social media who have bravely asserted that they have had some very troubling times with mental health. And I do think it's very important, people like those who I just mentioned, I didn't mention them by name, but people who have actually reached out on social media and have said, hey, look, you know, I'm struggling, I need some help, please say hello, please tweet a hello. That means something to people in that position. Seriously. It doesn't have to be some grand overture. It can be as simple or as important. I don't want to say simple, that's not the right word. It can be as important as saying, hello, I see you. How are you feeling? Just know that I'm in your corner. That will do amazing things for someone who is going through depression, at least for some people who are going through depression. There are people who will be receptive to that, or that will boost them. And there are, I'm sure there are people who are undergoing some very difficult things in depression-wise, and it may not register for them. I don't know, because I've honestly, I've not been in that kind of situation. And I do, again, hope that for those people who are going through some mental health challenges, that there is some light for you at the end of this. It's very difficult. You know, this is a years long thing. And I do feel obligated to say that, not because I've experienced it, because I haven't, but I feel obligated to say that as a means to connecting to people who may be listening to me right now on this podcast, who are feeling very overwhelmed and undergoing a lot of mental health challenges. So there you are. And I do feel the need to say that, because I think it's very important. So dear listener, thank you again for sticking with this podcast. It's immensely appreciative. I thank you so much. I know I said a few weeks ago that I would get guests. Believe me, I'm still working on that. I know I said a few weeks ago that I'm going to be giving away another book, and from a female author. That is going to happen as well. I do promise that that will happen. So please stick here with your abiding ear. It's greatly appreciated. I know I've kind of gone on a bit here for the first few minutes, but it's important to really say these things. I really do feel that it's important. And also, by the way, is to subscribe. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel, the Politocrat Daily Podcast YouTube channel. Just type that in YouTube, and you will get to the Politocrat Daily Podcast. Please subscribe. More video and more clips of the podcast episodes will be coming. So do get yourself on the subscribe list. It would be greatly appreciated. And finally, not YouTube merchandise store, the Politocrat merchandise store is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at the-politocrat.myshopify.com. That's the-politocrat.myshopify.com. Really would appreciate your patronage of the store. There are some new items that will start to show up here in the next few days. So keep your eyes open and ears open, or your eyes peeled, or whatever, ears, I don't know. I'm now just making a complete mess of things. But thank you for listening. The episode today, on this Wednesday, is about politics, but violence in politics. Now, look, I think I've alluded to this before. I know I have. There's been a long history of violent rhetoric in American politics, for example, U.S. politics. There's been a long history of violence in U.S. politics, particularly when you're talking about political assassinations, people being assassinated in the United States. You know, that has been something not just in the United States, that's been across the planet. The most recent example of this, of course, is the assassination this summer, this past July, I think it was, of the Haitian president, President Joval, who was assassinated in his bedroom. I shouldn't say it like that because it just sounds a way that I don't want it to sound, but it's going to sound the way it's going to sound to you as you listen. But the point is that he was assassinated in the most I say it that way because he was assassinated in the most vulnerable place outside of a shower that you can be assassinated in your bed. This is the president of Haiti. We've seen this over and over again in countries around the world, assassinations of leaders, political leaders. We've seen this all over the planet. We've seen the United States Secret Service get involved in this. We've seen this with the British Secret Service get involved in assassinations of leaders, world leaders of certain countries. We've seen this over the decades, over the last 100 years. We've seen this. We've seen this within the United States. Lincoln assassinated, JFK assassinated, a number of others assassinated or attempted assassinations. We've seen political violence between people in government, most notably in 1804, the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. Alexander Hamilton was the first Treasury Secretary of the United States, and Aaron Burr was the Vice President of the United States at the time. And you know what happened to Alexander Hamilton. So this has been going on for a long time. Now, I'm not offering this contextual background for any level of justification of violence. I really do feel the need to say that because it's important to be clear with people. And as I've said before, I've said this on social media, at the Popcorn REEL. I really do think that sometimes the more clear you are, the more confusing some people find you to be. I know that doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, but there actually is some truth to that, I think. You can be as crystal clear as possible, and there will be somebody who is somehow still confused by what you're saying or interprets it in a way that certainly the vast majority of people would not interpret it. And I'm not going to say everybody because people interpret things differently, and that's not a slight on people. That is the reality of the planet. As human beings, we interpret things differently. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. I am not preaching to choirs or orchestras or anything, but a reality of an experience in the world that we have as human beings on this planet. So, you know, you can be very, very clear. If I say that at 2:00, it's going to rain, and it's been raining for the last hour, and we're now at 2:02. If I say that at 2:00, it's going to continue to rain, there is no way that somebody could interpret that to mean anything else, but in a place where it is raining at 1:58 in the afternoon, that in that same place, it is not going to continue to rain, that there's some confusion there. But on the face of it, you say that's very clear, but it's not necessarily for some. I don't know. Because someone will say, no, it's not raining when the rain is falling. You know, it's kind of like the anti-vaxxers. It's kind of like the Sandy Hook folk, the people who I can't stand this word. See, this is another reason why we've gone down a dangerous path. Many other reasons why. The truthers, that word truther. Then there's nothing truther about these fools who say that Sandy Hook didn't happen. Sandy Hook, for those of you who may not be aware, is an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, back in 2013 or 14. That was the place, the horror of what happened with gun violence there, where a 17, 18, and 19-year-old male, white male, had multiple guns and shot and killed, I think it's something like 20 people or 23 people, whatever. And all of them, many of them were under the age of 5 or 6 years old. I mean, really, it was horrible. And I think 3 or 4 teachers also were killed in the process as well. It was just horrible. And you had these people running around going, oh, it didn't happen. They're just actors. How disgusting is that? Anyway, I feel the more that I even talk about the people who would pretend that 2 plus 2 is 5, the more that I'm giving airtime and license to them. So I'm going to shut up now and stop talking about them and get back to the point of where I'm going with this episode. We have had a lot of history of assassinations in this country. We've had assassinations and political attacks in countries across the world. Most recently, I pointed out, the assassination of President Javal in Haiti. But goodness gracious me, I should also, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, the murder of a politician in the United Kingdom, in my native country, in England. With Sir David Amos being murdered just a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, this has happened a lot. It's happened a lot. It's very disconcerting and disturbing. We have seen this happen in England prior to Sir David Amos, who was murdered earlier this month. We've seen this with Joe Cox, the MP out of Batley and Spen in West Yorkshire. She got murdered in 2016, roughly 1 week before the Brexit referendum in England, by some far right wing thug terrorist. It was horrible. And I think she was also shot. I mean, this is just horrible. We saw what happened on January 6th here in the United States, the terrorist attack on this country. I know, hardly anybody's referring to it as A, a terrorist attack anymore, and B, an attack on the country. The only United States Senator, the only politician of any group of people that has said that this was an attack on the country that I've heard in the last, you know, what, 10 months now, 9 months since this happened, is Senator Amy Klobuchar out of Minnesota. The Democratic Senator out of Minnesota is the only politician here in the United States that I've heard say that this was not just an attack on a building. This was an attack on the Republic. And she is absolutely right. I played the audio to that clip, the audio of that clip last week. And she's absolutely correct. And on January 6th, there were people shouting things like, hang Mike Pence, who at that time was the Vice President of the United States. There were people shouting, kill Nancy Pelosi, who continues to be the Speaker of the House, the third most powerful person in the United States. Political violence and violence against politicians is rising in this country, I think. I do think so. Now, I think it's always been here. I think that what's happened is you've got social media, you've got more channels on which to communicate. And you've got more channels and methods in which to threaten the life of a politician, for goodness sake. And you've got social media companies with people at the helm, Mark Zuckerberg, Jack Dorsey, who are not taking any responsibility to get rid of all this stuff. Frances Haugen, I mentioned this in another episode earlier this week. I think it was Monday's episode. She testified before a joint session in the United Kingdom House of Commons and House of Lords about Facebook and its lack of policing its own social media platform, Instagram, and the role it plays in decimating the self-esteem of girls. The violence that is happening on social media against girls and against women, and the lack of any kind of response by Jack Dorsey, but particularly in this case, by Mark Zuckerberg. I don't care what Sheryl Sandberg says about leaning in. The only leaning in that is being done at Facebook is leaning into more money and more dollars. How much more money can Facebook make out of traumatizing girls and leaving them without any kind of tools? And how much more money can Facebook make out of allowing males to continue to perpetuate what is perpetuated online in terms of the toxic masculinity, the threats, the violence? And this is true as well with all of these attacks on social media against political figures, against political leaders. Not enough is being done to stop it. And that's why I think it's at a rise, because you've got more ways to communicate with politicians. By the way, today in the Senate Judiciary Committee, Merrick Garland, the Attorney General of the United States, was the subject of attention. I think last week, last week the House of Representatives and their Judiciary Committee questioned him for the bulk of, 6 or 7 hours. And it was very predictable. The Democrats were fairly, I don't want to say soft, they weren't. They did raise questions of Merrick Garland. They were fairly cordial. And then the Republicans in the House were not. They were rude, belligerent, cajoling, not wearing their masks. You had Jim Jordan, who should be under the jail, shouting at the Democratic chairman, Jerry Nadler. And it's just a pittance to me. You've got a chairman who barely can be heard. The gentleman will stop. The gentleman was suspended. And you've got Jim Jordan, the Republican, shouting and screaming over the chairman, belittling the chairman as a bully, you know, bullying the chairman. You can't have that. Can't have it. This week, today, you have the Senate. The Senate had their hearing today. And you had more of the same from the Republicans, the belligerence, the bullying, Ted Cruz shouting his head off, Josh Hawley, both of these guys who should really be in prison right now as traitors to the country, who were at that terrorist rally back on January 6th and who voted against these results, voted against certifying the results. They're there today shouting, you know, Josh Hawley calling for Merrick Garland to resign. It's all a freaking performance. It's all a performance. These Republicans, shout as loud as you can. Raise your voice as hard as you can, as high as you can, as loud as you can. And wave your hands in the air like your hair is on fire. And make a commercial out of it for your base so that they'll go and support you in the midterm next year. Well, we have to get rid of these folks at the ballot box. It's that simple. You have to vote. That's the way you deal with them. Vote. I know that people are passing laws, Republicans are passing laws all over the country, but you have to vote. Don't give in to that. Oh, well, they're passing laws, so I'm not going to do anything. No, you vote. You fight back at the ballot box by voting and educating people to vote. But what's happening is a ratcheting up, not just of the rhetoric, but you've got more and more politicians who are doing things in the United States to violate the political infrastructure. And I know the word infrastructure might be pretty problematic these days. But because we have an absolutely shoddy infrastructure in this country. I mean, it's absolutely non-existent at the minute. But what I am saying to you, dear listener, is that at this moment, there is a ratcheting up of political violence, but rhetoric that's violent from politicians. It's these Republicans. Marjorie Taylor Greene is the ringleader of it all. She's a disgrace, absolute disgrace. Shouldn't be anywhere near Congress. Lauren Boebert, these are all freshmen in the House. Bringing guns into the chain. Oh, let me bring my gun in. Let me bring my gun into Capitol Hill. I'm not going to get it checked. Oh, no, no, oh, no. I'm not going through the magnetometer. I'm just going to walk past you with my gun. I'm a member of Congress. I talked about this the other day. These cartoonish television ads. In fact, it was yesterday's episode. I talked about this yesterday. These cartoonish ads with politicians firing guns at targets. It's cartoonish, but it's also very dangerous. You are sending a message to your constituents. And also, this is Democrats doing. Joe Manchin did this with an ad. Go look it up on YouTube. Joe Manchin shooting at a target in West Virginia. Oh, we got it. Because West Virginia is a big hunting state. That's understandable. Okay, but really? Can you do something other than have an ad with a gun in it? Of all the gun violence that we've had in the United States, can we do better than that? Because we want to have another 6 years in the Senate, a six-year term, so I've got to come to you with guns in my ad? Really? There's not a better way to do that for the people of West Virginia? Are you not belittling the people of West Virginia? Did you have to be simpleton to them? You have to play simpleton to the lowest denominator, the lowest common denominator, by putting out a gun ad with a man shooting at a target? That's the way you get attention. Is that how bad it gets in West Virginia? Well, I'll tell you, it gets worse than that in West Virginia, because West Virginia is amongst the five worst states in the country. In education, in healthcare, in jobs. I could go on. It's a pittance there, mate. It's a pittance. And I don't know how Joe Manchin's even still in office, quite frankly. I don't know how it's happening. I guess the US Chamber of Commerce does, though. Pumping in lots of money to his campaigns, all the other rich donors. But this Senate Judiciary hearing today with Merrick Garland was appalling from the Republicans. But again, what do you expect? Appalling. Shouting at Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland's trying to answer a question that's been asked of him by the Republicans, and in mid-sentence he's interrupted. The Republicans aren't interested in getting answers. They're interested in grandstanding. They are interested in grandstanding. No other way around it. No other way around it. The big issue that came up in this hearing, and I'll get to it after the break, but I want to just mention it now before I play audio coming back after the break. The big issue that came up in the Senate hearing was about violence and threats of violence within the United States and about domestic terrorism, because that is the number one issue, mate. It's the number one issue going on here in this country. Domestic terrorism. Domestic terrorism is the number one issue. These racists, right-wingers, and violent people who are doing these things, we cannot afford to go to sleep here. And that's a point, or at least along the lines of a point, that one Democratic U.S. Senator made. And I'm going to play you pretty much all of what that particular Democratic Senator had to say about it all right after this. Welcome back. Dear listener, thank you so very much for indulging me here. And before I do play this audio from a Democratic senator to be named shortly, can I just allow for a little more of an indulgence here for a moment? I want to just take this on an actual macro basis for just a second. When we talk about violence and we talk about the political violence that's going on, we obviously need to put an end to all of this. But in the process of doing that, we have to start asking questions. Where is this violence coming from and why? And I always believe in context. I always believe in looking at the larger picture of this and trying to attack this problem or any problem from a contextual standpoint as well as from a micro standpoint. I know that prevention is better than cure. I know that, right? But I also know, or at least I believe, that acknowledging and looking at the larger picture of all this is instructive and helpful for us to both A, understand, and B, to actually penetrate and attack a problem in order to deal with it and actually overcome it and fix what is so profoundly broken. Now look, the system is not broken, right? The system is designed to operate the way it is presently operating. No healthcare in the United States, no Medicare for all. And I say healthcare, I mean healthcare for all. No Medicare for all, basically the same thing, right? We only have healthcare for a particular group of individuals. And we have Medicaid for a particular group of individuals. But we don't have Medicare for everybody. We don't have Medicaid for everybody, for that matter. We only have for a particular groups economically. And Medicare for particular groups, usually age bracket wise. Usually. But I want to look at this whole thing, you know, because that's a form of violence. When you deny healthcare to people, that's a form of violence. Now, it's not the same as a duel in 1804 between Aaron Burr and Alexander Hamilton, but it is something that has its own violent consequences, right? In many ways, both metaphorically and actual, physical, literal. People have to foreclose on their homes because they have now got to sell their home or foreclose because they can't afford to pay the mortgage and pay out all of this exorbitant money to keep someone they love alive, because you've got to make a choice between having a roof over your head and trying to preserve the life of a loved one who is suffering with some kind of health situation that is extremely dire and dangerous and extremely precarious. That's a form of violence, to give someone or present someone with that kind of a choice to make. It's worse than Sophie's Choice, isn't it? Is it? Or is it the same? Either way, it's just a horrible situation. Then you've got the war machine. This is the thing that Dr. King talked about in 1967, which quite frankly ended or led to the end of his life, another assassination. I didn't even mention Dr. King's assassination. I didn't even mention Malcolm X's assassination. I didn't even mention Medgar Evers' assassination. But in April of 1967, April 4th, at the Riverside Church in Harlem, USA, Dr. King talked about all of this. The poverty, the violence of poverty, the violence of racism, the violence of militarism, and the war machine, the profiteering. He talked about that, and exactly 1 year later, he was assassinated. We have no problem funding a war machine in this country. We have no problem feeding the military-industrial complex that President Dwight D. Eisenhower talked about in his outgoing address, his farewell address, in January of 1961. We have absolutely no problem in that. We had a bill here, again, I always forget the exact month, whether it was December of 2020 or January of 2021 or November of 2020. It may well have been November of 2020. Either November or December of last year. And lickety-split, within an instant, Democrats and Republicans in the United States Senate said yes to a $750 billion package for defense, military spending. No problem. Lickety-split. Now, there were a few Democratic senators who voted no. Elizabeth Warren voted no. Senator Warren voted no. Senator Bernie Sanders voted no. I think Senator Jeff Merkley voted no. Those are the three I can name off the top of my head with confidence that they voted no. And there may have been a few others. I think Senator Markey out of Massachusetts voted no. And there may have been one or two others in that realm. But most of the other United States senators, Democratic senators for sure, voted for it. Chris Murphy voted yes. You know? Dick Durbin voted yes. Dianne Feinstein out here in California, she voted yes. And of course, all the rest of those senators, Democratic, did. Manchin voted yes. And of course, all the Republican senators voted yes. All of them. Not a single one said no. And that came together quick. But we can't get an infrastructure bill passed. We can't get a Voting Rights Act passed. That should tell you everything about where we are here in the United States. And there is a certain level of violence to denying people the right to vote. Dear listener, there's no question about that. But lickety-split, we've got plenty of time, or in fact, 3 seconds flat time, to vote yes on $750 billion for military spending. No problem, we can do it in our sleep. Tally-ho, lickety-split, it's done. There's no four-month deliberation over that. But when it comes to putting money in the pockets of people who need it the most, there's a whole deliberation about that. Rich senators deliberating and pontificating and arguing and negotiating over how much money you should get, over what kind of infrastructure for the country there should be, over whether or not you're going to have your voting rights protected, over whether or not there's going to be any kind of voting rights bill. That is now a huge deliberation. And then you've got people going, no, you can't have your $3.75 billion. $3.75 billion ain't enough. It ain't enough to deal with what's going on here. It's not enough. $750 billion for military. Oh, yeah, we're fine. We're done. Bye. See ya. Cash and carry, we're done. It's done. Here's all your weaponry. Go ahead. Use it. Drop bombs on Syria. Do it. Do it. Drop bombs here. Drop bombs there. Drop bombs in Afghanistan. Yeah, there you go. And away you go. $750 billion for that. But now we're wrangling over $3.75 billion. Oh no, it's got to be $1.5 billion for you and me. $1.75 billion. Do we hear 1.8? Do we hear 1.9 billion for the United States of America people? Do we hear that for the people? For voting rights? Ooh, infrastructure bill. We can only do 1 point something. Ooh, 3 billion is too high. It's too high. 3.5 is too high. 3.75 is too high. 3.75 ain't enough. And Bernie Sanders is saying it's not. 3.75 is not even enough. And he said it. And he's the one who wants 3.75. And he said it's not enough. And they are 1.5 now because Joe Manchin and others. And these obstinate Republicans. Oh, no. Stop focusing on Manchin. I know I've said his name. But Manchin's not the thing here, nor is Sinema. As annoying as they are and as obstructionist as they are, it's these blooming Republicans. Don't you forget it. I know you haven't, dear listener. I know you haven't. And no one's focusing on them. And everybody just ran to the ocean to vote for the $750 billion military budget. Oh, no, no problem. But can we get an infrastructure bill? Can we get a blooming voting rights package done? Oh, that's a lot harder. We're going to use filibusters. Nobody filibustered $750 billion for the military. Nobody. No. That's what we're dealing with here. That's as violent as anything else. The disparity between those two things is another kind of violence, believe me. You got people in this country who can't eat. You got food banks. Don't get me wrong. You think that the food bank stuff is over in the United States? It's not over. There's still long lines of people waiting for food in 2021. As we get to the holiday season, this is why I said earlier, I am never going to stop talking about people who are not at the table, who are going through really tough things with their mental health. There's lots going on out here. It's not being talked about. Not by enough people. And of course, there are great organizations that are. And if you are someone that's going through health, mental health situations, there are phone numbers and websites out there. And I think what I will do, either as, if not this episode, in episodes coming, I will start to bring up these organizations again. That you, I think, need to contact if you haven't already, dear listener, if this applies to you. There are people who aren't able to eat. They don't have meals. But then the United States Senate, back in November or December of 2020, didn't even blink an eye before voting yay, overwhelmingly, on this $750 billion military package. And here we are now. We're almost at the end of October. And for months now, nothing's been done on voting rights. For months. And they're still trying to get something done. And they're trying to compromise it out. Oh, compromise is better than nothing. Compromise. No one compromised on that military bill, did they? They all rushed for it. We should not accept that the values that we have, to have everybody fed, as FDR said, to have a roof over our heads, to have an education, to have a working living wage, we should not accept any compromises on those things. But you got some rich people on Capitol Hill telling you, compromise. Why is it that the people are always being compromised? Why is that? I know that there's some obvious answers, and it's not even meant as a rhetorical question. I really would like someone to be able to come up with an answer, because I don't have one. Why is it that the people, if it is we the people, those are the first three words, the Constitution. If it is we the people in the United States, why is it that we the people are constantly seeing the values that we have of a world-class education, of healthcare, of a woman's right to choose? Why are we seeing that compromised? Systemically, we know the answer, right? It's the system, ain't it? But is that good enough as an answer? I think the real question is, what is our response to all of that? And again, that's another level of violence that plays in the background. The violence of denying a woman a right for her to make a choice about her body. That's a level of violence. I have people going, she's killing a fetus. Oh, whose body is it? Is the question I have for people who will chime in with that. Is whose body is it? Is it the state's or is it the woman's? And Texas, at least, is it acting as if a woman's body belongs to them? A woman's body belongs to some bloomin' bounty hunter, SB8 in the Texas state legislature. A woman's body belongs to a friggin' bounty hunter. Woo, you're assisting that woman? Oh, we're going to come after you. We're going to bring our long guns for you. There's your political violence. There's your violence. There's your violence killing an abortion practitioner. Shooting him dead in a church. That's your violence. There's your political violence too. So I want to bring that up. Excuse me for going on a bit with that. But I want you, dear listener, to consider those things and have them circulate in your mind, in addition to what you are now about to hear from the Democratic United States Senator Cory Booker. This audio I'm going to play is around 6 minutes or so, 6 or 7 minutes, but I do want you to listen to that from Senator Booker, because I think it's very important. But I also want you to have what I have said the last few minutes about violence and all kinds of other systemic violence percolate in your mind, in addition to what you are about to hear from Senator Cory Booker at this Senate Judiciary hearing today with Merrick Garland, the Attorney General.
Senator Booker. The October 4th memo reads, in recent months, there's been a disturbing spike in harassment, intimidation, and threats of violence against school administrators, board members, teachers, and staff who participate in the vital work of running our nation's public schools. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it is true.
It is true.
I have a list of very disturbing incidents. In Texas, a parent physically assaulted a teacher August 18th, 2021. In Pennsylvania, a person posted threats in social media which required police to station outside of a school district. Law enforcement investigating the person. I could keep going. Ohio, a school board member was threatening letter that began with, "We are coming from you." Domestic terrorism in the United States, sir, has it been more from overseas radical terrorists since 9/11 or more from homegrown terrorists, most of them being right-wing extremists? Which has been greater since 9/11?
I want to be careful about that. The threats that we face with respect to terrorism, and none of those descriptions have to do with terrorism, but the threats that we face in the United States come both from foreign terrorists.
A church in South Carolina, a synagogue in Pennsylvania, a school, Parkland, a school, Newtown. Has there been threats and violence against schools in the United States of America?
There have been, yes.
Coming from what types of groups?
Well, they come from domestic groups.
From domestic groups.
Yes.
Has there been a long, pages-long list of what my staff could grab, been threats and violence against school officials in the United States of America in the last year?
I haven't seen the list, but it accords with my recollections.
Well, let me accord your recollection with the letter that I've heard so much about that I pulled it to read it. You say literally, spirited debate about policy matters is protected under the Constitution. I'm quoting one of my colleagues today. Does that sound like harassing and intimidating moms and dads? You affirm at the top of your letter that spirited debate is allowed. While spirited debate about policy matters is protected under the Constitution, that protection does not extend to threats and to violence that we have been watching on our TV screens. Intimidating people, threatening to hurt them, taking physical action. But you know what? You did not call for the DOJ and the FBI to monitor school board meetings, did you?
No, I did not.
You did not call for anyone to evoke the Patriot Act, did you?
No, I did not.
Sir, what you called is for the DOJ to convene meetings to discuss strategies for addressing those threats.
That's correct.
Is that intimidating moms and dads going to school board meetings?
I can't see how that could be interpreted as...
Sir, I know something about law enforcement intimidation. It stems from growing up as a black man in America. I know what it feels like to be pulled over, to be accused of stealing things, to every time I drive over the George Washington Bridge as a teenager, to know I had to put extra time because I was being pulled over by law enforcement. If someone's to read the actual letter, you are literally saying, as the leader of the highest law enforcement office in the land, that you protect spirited debate. That you think, though, given the climate of school violence in America, I've met with victims from Parkland. Mr. President, I'm sorry. I have watched Republican after Republican go over time. And I know you're gently banging that gavel, but I've watched all today. My colleagues violate what you said at the beginning was a strict time limit. And I would ask you to afford me 2 more minutes.
Is there objection? No objection.
Have you met with Parkland survivors?
I met with survivors at the White House.
Yes or no?
I think you met with survivors
of school violence.
I met with the Parkland families.
Yes. Do you have a responsibility in a climate of threats and violence taking place at schools? Do you have a responsibility to convene strategy meetings to try to make sure we do not have eruptions of violence in the country? Is that a responsibility of the federal government?
Yes, our job is to protect Americans.
Did you specifically say anything in this election, in this letter, that can be seen as harassing moms and dads and parents? Or did you explicitly say that the Constitution protects spirited debate?
I specifically said the Constitution protects spirited debate, and I don't believe there's anything in this letter that could be read to intimidate mothers and fathers.
And I'm not talking about the outrage machines that seem to fuel our politics on both sides. I'm talking about the actual letter here, sir, that you wrote. You're a good-hearted person. Is there anything in this letter that could specifically lead a good-hearted parent who is against mask mandates, who somehow believes that the teaching of racial discrimination is repugnant to them? Is there anything in this letter that would prevent them from going and speaking to it and yelling and being upset and letting their elected officials know what they really believe? Is there anything in the actual print of this letter that could be seen to lead to that type of intimidation?
No, Senator, all of those things are protected by the Constitution.
Will you say that one more time?
All of those things are protected by the Constitution.
I hope that you will do your law enforcement work. There's too much violence in this country. There's been too many domestic terrorist attacks. I don't want to have the next hearing here be about some incident. I hope that you continue to convene your strategy sessions to protect parents and children and school officials from any kind of the heinous violence that we have seen way too much of in this country, and that we all bear a responsibility for stopping. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the allowance of the extra time.
That was Senator Cory Booker earlier today during the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the Justice Department and oversight, and you heard the voice there also of the United States Attorney General Merrick Garland. And Senator Booker is absolutely correct. This is what's going on in the country. There is violence against school board members, violence against teachers, and it's coming from the right wing. It's coming from these extremists, these terrorists, the same people who attacked the Capitol building and attacked police and killed police. These people don't care about the police. They don't care about anybody. They care about power and they care about killing people. That's all they care about. They care about violence and power and gaining power and control. I think these people are radicalized. I think dark money is funding these people and these movements about recall the school board. I see that all over here in San Francisco during the attempt to recall the governor here in California back in August and September. The election, of course, last month proved to be an easy win for Gavin Newsom, the governor of this state, as he overwhelmingly beat back this recall from these radical terroristic people. And this is going on all over this country. People trying to destabilize and subvert everything. Recall the school board, can't teach any basic civics in the school. Ooh, let's get rid of that. Oh, in Texas, can't have critical race theory. Ooh. And critical race theory is a boogeyman for a lot of other things that are nefarious, that the Republicans and these right-wingers are truly wanting. And all this violence comes from a consistent tradition in this country, whether it's violence against black people in this country, whether it's violence against Native Americans in this country, whether it's violence against women of all racial backgrounds in this country. I mean, this notion of black-on-black violence is such a ridiculous term. And all there ever is in this country, aside from the white-on-black violence and the white-on-Native American violence in this country, is white-on-white violence. What was January 6th in this country if it wasn't white-on-white violence? What is it in these school boards? What is it in Sandy Hook? What was it in Sandy Hook 7 or 8 years ago? Yeah, no one says white-on-white violence. No. It's all the boogeyman, focusing on things that are just absolutely inflated. There is literally, it's 2% of the people in some of these black communities where this is at. It's 2% or less creating the crime and the violent crime. And what is it in white communities? It's a lot more. And what about domestic violence in white communities? Sure, there's some of that in the black community. But look at all of these white enclaves in this country where the incidences of domestic violence against white women by white men is through the roof. Through the blooming roof. And it's kept like some freaking secret in a cupboard drawer. In a cupboard. Please don't talk to us about black-on-black violence. That's bull crap. When you got all of these white folk running amok out here, terrorist attacks, mass shootings, please don't talk to us about that. And when all it is white on black and white on brown violence, El Paso, as Senator Booker said, the synagogue. Oh, please. Oh, come on. Come on now. That's not white on white violence. Oh, no, that's not. Terroristic violence. Please stop it. Whoever's talking like that, you got to stop the nonsense now. The church in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, Dylan Roof, Mr. I Want Burger King, and the police going, yeah, you can have it. Thanks for that. After you murdered 9 black people in a church. Oh, that's not white on black violence. Oh, no. Never talked about like that, though, is it now? And all of these things are linked. Whether it's the school board attacks, whether it's the lynchings in this country, this is all a continuum. And I'm not trying to compare. I am just saying this is all part of a long history of violence in this country. And Senator Booker put his finger on the pulse there in that clip. The domestic terrorism in this country has long been here. It didn't just show up in 2016 or 2017. Please study the roots of the history of violence in this country. Please start by reading books like A People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. Last name Z as in zebra, I double N as in Nancy. Please read that book. Please read the W.E.B. Du Bois book, Black Reconstruction in America. Please read that. There's so many books that give you this, and I get it. People don't have the time to read books. I get that. But the history's there. To understand where you are, you have to understand where you've been. It's like what James Baldwin says. Read any of his books. Read all of these books from James Baldwin. Listen to his speeches. If you don't know what happened before you, you do not know what is going on around you. And that's James Baldwin. And what is going on around us is very clear. This is not Buffalo Springfield. This is exactly clear. It is very clear what's going on around us here in the United States. What's going on in the UK? What's going on in England specifically? This is tyranny. This is treason. This is violence. The 47 traitors, the Republicans who wrote that letter six years ago, to the Iranians, we want to let you know about our constitutional system. That's more education than they've given anybody in their constituency. All these Republican senators signing on to this traitorous letter by Tom Cotton, who, by the way, is going to probably end up running in 2024 for the U.S. presidency. And he authored this letter. We have to know where this is all coming from. It didn't just happen last week. And then you got 147 Republican traitors this year voting against results that have been certified. Voting against it. Voting to overturn it. We don't recognize you voters. We don't recognize the democratic process. So we want to just get rid of that. This is not decertifying anything. This is about absolute treason. This is absolutely trying to destroy voting in this country. These people are treasonous. They're tyrannical. And that's what you should be calling them. They're traitors to the country. They don't believe in the values of voting. And we have to vote our values in this country. And the corporate news media, forget it. There's no responsibility about covering this issue the way it should be covered. This is not about left v. right. Oh, it's left versus right. And did the two Democrats do something? And are the progressives going to accept? See, this is the problem. It's all part of the problem when you're not being honest with your viewer, which is why I stopped watching this rotten media here. I know, I think some of you are fed up of me talking on and on about this media, banging on and on about the corporate news media. But you know, dear listener, that the corporate news media in this country is beneath the standards that you should be getting. Your media in this country is piss poor. And you want to go and get some media from somewhere, you need to go to Free Speech TV. You need to go to freespeechtv.org. You need to go to democracynow.org. You need to go to C-SPAN, even though, again, C-SPAN will let some of these wackadoodle callers, these right-wingers, just talk and talk and lie, and will not do anything to rebut them at all, which is very dangerous. But C-SPAN gives you open access to all of these hearings, including the audio that you just heard me play. They give you access to that audio and video. You get to know what's going on the federal level in government. You get to see some state-level government. You get to see some of that. And your local government. There are channels on cable and on the internet where you can find out what your local government is doing. And local politics, all politics is local. It's extremely important. And the corporate news media in the United States, especially the corporate cable television news media, is abysmal. It's so much opinionating, and I get it. I do a podcast. I give opinions. But I am not the corporate news media. And I don't fund multi-billion dollar salaries. I don't do that. I don't get all these massive amounts of money to do what I do. And I get it. You know, there are people out there, the corporate news media, some of whom are very good and work extremely hard. You know, but come on now. The standards are not up to snuff. There are some journalists, but we need journalists who are really going to cover this correctly. Because this is about the existence of the country, mate. This is about the existence of whether or not we're going to have political parties that really do care about people. Or whether we're going to have one party that kind of cares about the people and does fight for the people. And another party that's a bunch of freaking pirates and vagabonds and terrorists. That's how you cover this. You don't cover it as left versus right and right versus left and it's a horse race and down the stretch they come. And coming up on the left side is the Democratic Party and they are coming along. There's 3 furlongs to go and the Democrats are just holding on to power and the Republican Party is pushing them at the line. It's a photo finish. That is not the way the corporate news media or anybody should be covering what's going on here in the United States politically. But that is how the corporate news media here in the United States, especially on cable television, is covering the very serious and dire situations that are going on right now in this country politically. And they are doing you, me, and all of us a massive disservice. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.